Dear friends, hey, welcome. It is me, Jordan, and we are here on WBZ and WCCO. And it's always a pleasure to welcome people with a thought or two about where we are in this world of ours. And a gentleman who's put a lot of thought into it is one James Kunin, spelled K-U-N-E-N. James is our representative of a whole big group of Americans who are dealing with, well, the old downsize, which is just a euphemism for losing your gig. James is a very, very skilled writer and editor. He's written a book called Diary of a Company Man, Losing a Job, Finding a Life. And the key part of this is going to be finding a life. But James, welcome to the show. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Nice to talk with you, Jordan.
Diary of a Company Man is a title that makes sense because you actually wrote with that heading for a while. Tell our audience a little bit about where you were prior to the shift in your life.
Well, after a checkered career as a journalist, circumstances led me to a position as a director of corporate communications at Time Warner headquarters in New York. And my job there, one of the parts, my overall job was to keep the worker bees happy, the worker bees being the terminology that human resources uses to refer to rank-and-file employees. But I did that by editing a company magazine aimed at the 90,000 employees worldwide. And one of the things I did was to write a column for the magazine called Diary of a Company Man.
So it's an appropriate title for your book and the subtitle, Losing a Job, Finding a Life. We'll explore that with James in a moment. But you have, and I've read your book, you have taken on a new sort of approach to life that probably, or well, I shouldn't say that. Let me ask you the question. You can tell me. Would it have been a new James Kunin had you not lost the job we're going to talk about?
Absolutely. I mean, I would have stayed there. The compensation was good. And but now I've discovered a different kind of compensation. Some people call it non-monetary compensation. But I wasn't happy the day I was laid off, I'll tell you that. But not so much that I was laid off, but the way I was laid off, which is what's become standard these days. You know, someone from HR tells you that you're not working there anymore, and you discover that your computer is turned off and your ID doesn't work to open the door anymore, and you're not welcome in the building. And this after 20 years, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the next day I read in the paper that the CEO had said to Wall Street analysts, and I quote, "We have eliminated the bloat at headquarters." And, you know, now I'm bloat. I was good enough to work, you know, evenings, weekends, every day, for hours and hours for 20 years, and now I'm bloat. You know, if you want to talk about bloat, what about the CEO who's making $26 million dollars a year, which is the same as $50,000 per person would be, I think, 520 employees.
It's interesting, James, that one scene, and there's so many scenes in your retrospective here, in your memoir about work, that one scene when I believe the head man comes in and has to tell you how difficult it is for him. And of course, I'm not really feeling sorry for him, and why would we? He's got a gig, you don't. But there's that one scene where I'm in your head, the reader is in your head, because we've all been there, most of us. When you're asked the question, or you're pondering the question, well, how do I respond to this guy who's just telling me, you're worthless, we don't need you anymore. And he says something to the effect, it hurts me more than it hurts you, you just want to whack the guy.
Well, you know, oddly, the thing is I was so stunned, Jordan. It's just no matter how much you think you know that this day is coming, and it does come for almost everyone. You know, when it actually happens, it's just like, whoa, all of a sudden it's like one of those dream sequences in I Dream of Jeannie. You know, the picture goes wah, 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 and it's just, you're just detached from time and space, and I didn't know what to make of it. He said, you can feel pissed off at me if you want. And I said, well, I think I'll take my time to decide how I want to feel. You know, later I thought I could have said, hey, you know, I don't need your permission to feel pissed off at you. And by the way, can I use the word pissed on?
I will allow that, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm talking with James Kunin. It's K-U-N-E-N, his new book, Diary of a Company Man, Losing a Job, Finding a Life. And James has also written other books, and you can check them out. His curriculum vitae in terms of his authorship is extensive. But what's interesting about this story is that you could be a dock worker, a teacher, a broadcaster, a corporate executive, or work in some cafeteria lunch line. When you lose that identity, when you lose that sense of worth, belonging to some organization, I don't care who you are, how much money you're making, it hurts like heck.
Yeah, Jordan, I talked to a lot of people from my book who had lost their jobs in all walks of life. As you said, I talked to an auto worker. I talked to a guy who was the controller of a granola company. And I remember what that fellow said, the granola guy. He said that when his boss called him into the office and said, we're letting you go, he said, I felt like it was my wife saying, suddenly, I want a divorce. It just completely upended his entire identity. He said that the way he thought of the past was what he had done at the company, the present was what he was working on, and the future was, you know, that new process he was going to put in place, or that new program that's, you know, slated to be done in 6 weeks. And all of a sudden, that's all pulled away, and you're at sea.
Now, no one listening to us, who's any kind of thinker, would believe or think that the solution to this is to keep everybody on the payroll and have these businesses go out of business. We know that that's the way economies ebb and flow. But what I glean from your work is, hey, there's a better way to do this, or a less harmful, a less distasteful way to do this. And in your estimation, what would be some of those things that in the essence of what happens in a tough economy and when people do downsize, what should they look to? Who's a good model? Would it be the gentleman from the mill out here in northern Massachusetts who is still sort of a legend for the way he helped his folks?
Yeah, Aaron Feuerstein was the CEO and chairman of the board and grandson of the founder of Malden Mills out in Malden and Lawrence. And when the factory burned down, he kept paying his employees for 6 months, 7 months, until finally he couldn't do it anymore. And then when he called them together en masse and faced them face to face and said, I can't pay you anymore. I have to let you go. They applauded him and they came up one by one and embraced him. And he said to me, I interviewed him as well, and he said that Aaron Feuerstein said that he knew that everything that the company had accomplished had been accomplished by these working people, and he was honest with them every step of the way. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that IBM and General Motors can follow the Malden Mills model exactly, but honesty goes a long way to making a situation palatable to everyone. And American corporations seem to be addicted to layoffs. You know, sometimes you have to lay people off if you're about to go under, but now it's become a business model where you cut costs and increase profits that way and get a bump in the stock price.
I couldn't help but think through your book, James, about my experience most recent, which is not a recent one really. It's about 18 years ago when I was laid off from a radio job that I had for 15 years, and I'd worked for this company for 16 or 17 years, but because the new owners had only owned the company for maybe a year, when it came time for them to offer me this generous package of severance, instead of one month for every year that I worked, I got 6 weeks instead of what I was hoping for, which would have been maybe 6 months. And they said to me, this is a wonderful package. And I said, well, maybe for you, but you know, I've been here 16 years. No, you've not been here 16 years. We've only been here a year. It's that kind of stuff I know that you can bitch and moan about forever, but it really does hit you right in the gut when that happens.
Well, yeah, and it's the lack of forthrightness. So again, we're talking about, you and I think we're talking about probably about how it's done in addition to the fact that the layoffs are done. And like, I'm looking, PepsiCo has announced plans to lay off 8,700 people, but they didn't say they're going to lay off 8,700 people. They said we're taking a series of strategic investment and productivity initiatives. And Microsoft is laying off 200 people, and they say we're taking steps to better align our resources with our business needs. You know, the closest the company will ever come to saying that they are throwing human beings out of work and taking away their livelihood is they'll say that we have reduced headcount or we have eliminated positions. You know, if they eliminate the positions, they don't eliminate the people in the positions.
I'm reminded of George Carlin's brilliant work on wordplay and the fact that we say, measure radiation in sunshine units, you know? It's like, there we go. Talking with James Kunin about his wonderful book, Diary of a Company Man, Losing a Job, Finding a Life. You say you were given the chance to find the work that lets you be you. And we should have you talk a little bit about the fact that you were doing some of this work while you were still corporate, in terms of teaching, in terms of helping others. But this really kicked into gear when, well, you didn't have an office to go to every day.
Right. I had been volunteering for years. I taught Soviet immigrants to get ready for the citizenship test back when there was a Soviet Union. It shows you how far back that goes. And I worked with the Arab American Association in Brooklyn. I worked with the International Rescue Committee with refugees, always to teach people English. Right? I didn't realize what a poor job of it I was doing until after being laid off by Time Warner. I went to school for a program and learned a little bit about how you really should teach people English as a second language. And then, doing it, I love it. You know, I some people have a calling, and I envy them. For the book, I interviewed a fellow who works at MapQuest. And he, when he was 5 years old, he stumbled into a box, probably literally stumbled into a box full of National Geographics, opened it up, looked at a map, and never looked back. That's what God put him on earth to do. For many of us, if that call is coming in, it's, you know, maybe we don't have call waiting and we're not picking up. You know, we don't know. We can't hear it. And so life is a long series of groping and trying this and that and the other thing. And finally, you have something where there's no distance between who you are and what you're doing, and you feel like you are fully you. And that's what I think is meaningful work.
As we discover, you have now, since being sort of pushed under the old bus, you've had an opportunity to expand on your work teaching people. And just give us one story. There are many that you focus on in Losing a Job, Finding a Life. One story of what you feel is the warmth and the happiness of doing what you're doing, seeing the results. There are so many examples of teaching English, hearing about their citizenship, passing their tests. Want to share a story with us, Jim?
Sure. I teach English as a second language at LaGuardia Community College to adults at night. That's in Queens, New York. And, for example, my phone rang at home, and I picked it up, and it's Reggie, whose actual name is Rex Hap, who's a refugee from Kosovo. And he tells me that he passed the citizenship test. And he said to me, "You give me power." You know, I had given him the strength, in his view, to achieve something that he didn't think he could achieve. He kept saying, "I'm not going to be able to do this." And I said, "Well, actually, you are. 100% certain you are." And when a person becomes a citizen, it's tremendous. Another example, if I can give you another example,
please.
Adam Noor is from a refugee from Darfur, and two of his brothers were killed by the Janjaweed. He managed to escape, and he's working here, and he wants to be a nurse. I mean, right now he's working at McDonald's, but he wants to be a nurse. And he is working for, when he got his GED, I was thrilled. Now, when you got your high school diploma, Jordan, were you thrilled, or did you feel like, well, that's nice, but, you know, that's what one does.
That's right? What one does, exactly.
Yeah. And so things that we just are walking down a well-trod path, wondering what it's all about, if you're working with new immigrants who are so courageous, so determined, that it's like, for me, it's like helping my own grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that thrilling. So now life is full of challenge and exciting.
I'm talking here again with James Kunin of Diary of a Company Man, Losing a Job, Finding a Life. And if you do take away anything from this, and I think this is the key point I really want you to make with us, because there's so many people listening throughout the country late night who have had problems at losing gigs, being downsized, losing money, not getting a raise, whatever it might be, that, yes, we need to put food on the table, obviously, but life is so much more than just punching the clock and being servant to the master, the corporate master. We need the corporations. God bless them. But what you point out is your life now has taken on new meaning, new sort of satisfaction that you weren't getting when you were in that high-rise building making pretty good money. And again, it's nice to be able to do both, but if you can't do one, let's look at the option of doing the other.
Well, right. I mean, I do want to note so that people aren't, you know, throwing the radio through the window. That, look, if you're losing your home, if you're running through your savings, if you can't afford medical care, this is not a golden opportunity. Okay, and I'm talking about, and you're talking about, Jordan, people who are fortunate enough to be able to, you know,
right,
meet the necessities, and now they can look around and say, well, I'm not, you know, in my corporate cubbyhole anymore, and I can't go back. Especially if you're over 55, you probably can't go back. You're too young to retire, but you're too old to hire. And for people like that, I want to stress that we often say, as you just did, we say that we've been downsized. You know, I use that word, but I caught myself now. I realized, wait a minute, think about that. I haven't been downsized. The company's been downsized. You haven't. People feel diminished. They feel smaller because they don't have the title they had, the job position, the whatever other things went with the job. And they feel, not to mention the fact that they've probably been insulted and degraded when they were thrown under the bus. But they feel downsized. But no, you're not smaller. The company's smaller. Mm. Now's an opportunity to stand up, stretch out, and maybe become fully you. Find out what that means.
Yeah. There's one little story we'll conclude with. Many, many wonderful observations through your diary and through your approach to life post job loss. And one of them occurs in December of 2010. You say you're grateful for the wisdom and good cheer of Jacob, one of the sales clerks at Court Street Office Supplies. And this is a tiny little story, but do you recall what I'm talking about here?
I certainly do.
But you just, we'll conclude with this. Just share that story because it means so much to me because life is how you look at it. Please.
Well, you know, I'm such a dinosaur that I keep my appointments in an actual physical book. It's a red book called a standard diary.
I do the same thing, by the
way. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it never crashes, and if you drop it on the ground, it doesn't break. But I got the same exact book year after year, and I have like 25 of them lined up on a shelf. My whole life is there. And I went into the Court Street Office Supply to get my one for the following year, and they didn't exist anymore. They just weren't made anymore. There was something similar but much bigger, and it's just not the same. And I lamented to Jacob, the fellow at the cash register, that I'd been keeping a diary in this exact book for 25 years. And he said, he shrugged his shoulders, and he said, so you'll use this new book for the next 25 years.
It's a great story because, hey, your attitude can change on a dime when someone, an angel, comes along and points it out to you. And this guy had, as you point, that rabbinical sense of philosophy that makes all the sense to the world. I would also recommend this book, not just for people like you and me and the rest of the world. I want corporate people who are in positions of power to take a look at this. Much like the movie Up in the Air, which I'm sure you're familiar with, George Clooney, a few years ago. It's very important, I think, for people in that corner office to know the other side of the coin. I'm sure many of them are sensitive to it, but I think this will be a good learning experience for them as well.
Well, thank you, Jordan. I hope those people in the corner offices will go to diaryofacompanyman.com and they can find out more about it.
And James Kunin, K-U-N-E-N. The book is Diary of a Company Man, Losing a Job, Finding a Life. James, best of luck to you. My best to your lovely wife, whom I know, and continued success.
Thank you very much, Jordan.